Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another show of At Home with Victoria, with your host, Victoria Gaither, and co-host, Michael Kay.
It is Michael Kay here for At Home with Victoria. Thank you for joining another edition of At Home with Victoria. The lovely news lady is actually away at a workshop, and I know she told me where she was. However, it has just fallen out of my brain due to the excessive heat. Heat wave number 6 hitting the East Coast, and with the humidity is 104 outside today, so it was definitely warmer than it needed to be. But I'm super excited to have with us tonight Vinny Hickerson. Most of you may have caught The Biggest Loser last year, and he was one of the contestants. Lost 184 pounds. Fantastic effort. I'm so curious to know if he was on Team Jillian or the other guy and everything, because I don't know if I'd want to be on Team Jillian, but he's got some great new music coming out, so we'll be going to be listening to that in a little bit. But as for Mr. Chick-fil-A, curious to actually get Vinny's take on this very interesting Chick-fil-A day yesterday, so I'm so curious. Anyways, we're going to listen to a little bit of music. This is Vinny Hickerson with Everyday Hero, and when we get back, Vinny will be right here, so give a listen.
Everybody's screaming as they're running out, but he goes rushing back in. He's all about business in his yellow suit, and he's not scared, but he's not fireproof. He's got a job to do. He's gonna rescue you. He's an everyday hero. He don't care. It means that she takes the extra time after the school bell rings for just one kid who needs a little more help. She knows his home life is harder than the other. She's more than just a teacher. She's acting like a mother, cause she knows what'll happen if she don't. She's an everyday hero. everyday hero. Up, up and away he goes. 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 Just an everyday hero.
Benny Hickerson, Everyday Hero. And joining us now is Mr. Big Vinny himself, or should I say Skinny Vinny.
Hey, what's up? How y'all doing?
Hey, buddy. So nice to have you on the show. Welcome and everything. Great songs. All the songs you've sent me for tonight, buddy, are quite stunning and quite indicative of a lot of internal learning, I would say.
Yeah, you know, they're all songs that I wrote that mean a lot to me because they all have a story. They all have something that comes from my heart, you know, something I've lived through, something I've dealt with. And, you know, I think when you're being real with people and when you're sharing who you are, that comes through. You know, I think, you know, a lot of artists, you know, we tend to put out things that we think is going to be the most marketable or this or that, but sometimes we forget about, you know, who we are and where we come from. And that's, you know, that's any of us. You know, I put out songs like Rock and the Beer, that, things like that, that I love, that, you know, that are fun and all that kind of stuff. But these kind of songs, Everyday Hero, something that means so much to me because my teachers in my life are police officers or soldiers. Those are the people that truly fight every single day without gaining any glory for what they do.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, buddy. But you've done some mighty good fighting yourself. Middle child, one of nine, growing up in a two-part household. You're homeless at 14. Tell us a little bit about your past.
You know, you can't ever, you know, everybody always says out they want to be in control, right? You know, but you can't control what happens before you're born. And my mom was 15 when she had my brother. So for me coming into this world, I was kind of, you know, brought into this world into a hard household with a stepdad who was a Navy SEAL, who had been in Vietnam, who had been through a lot of stuff as well. And, you know, he didn't know how to deal with his anger issues, so he took it out on my brothers and I.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, do you think there was a little bit of PTSD there with Dad?
Definitely. I think, and it was my stepdad, but yeah, he definitely, he had a lot of issues, you know, as hard as it was for me, I forgive him. He asked me for forgiveness, and I forgave him for everything he ever done to me and my mom and my brother and everybody. But it is hard, you know. It's not something that you.
Yeah.
It ain't like it's something I wanted to happen to me, but I learned, you know, I took everything that ever happened to me, and I learned something from it, you know.
Yeah, it always toughens us up. But your dad was a guitar player as well, correct?
He was. He played with Steve Miller Band, David Allan Cole, The Little Inn, just tons of people at an early age. He ended up overdosing on black tar heroin when he came back off the road with David Allan Cole, and he became a preacher for the next 19 years of his life, and he died 5 years ago. Just a great man, and he said he was laying there, and he said as he was laying there, he said, "God, if you deliver me from this, I'll save you the rest of my days." And he said as soon as he prayed that prayer, his heart went back into rhythm, and that's what he did for the rest of his life was serve God, you know, all that. So he was a great man.
Yeah, but you learned to play guitar from your brother, right?
Yeah, my little brother taught me how to play guitar. You know, I didn't live with my dad. I didn't live with anybody in my family after the age of 14. And my little brother, I would go see him and hang out with him. And he was like, "Let me teach you how to play guitar." And it was after my senior year of football. And I was like, "All right, I guess I'll learn how to play guitar." You know, and I always sang. I always, you know, been a singer and always loved to sing, but never, you know, never created my own thing. And so as soon as I can play three chords, I'm like, man, I want to write my own song. I want to tell my own story. And that's what I started doing.
Yeah. Where did you actually live at 14, Vinny? I mean,
well, I have
that's a tough
and they
age.
Always get, go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's a tough age.
Oh, it was definitely a tough age, you know, not really being, you know, not being able to drive and everything yet. And, I had a buddy who his family always had a foreign exchange through it, and this just happened to be the first year they didn't have a foreign exchange through it. And I lived with them and paid rent, $100 a month, and then my own groceries and, you know, part of the electric bill, part of the water bill, the whole nine, you know.
Yeah.
You know, just like, you know, being a responsible adult. So.
Yeah. Then you teamed up with the Palliers, Mr. Mark Forney, or what was his nickname, Butter?
Yeah, Butter. You know, I came to Nashville. I started writing songs with a guy named Ken Harrell, and he's a phenomenal songwriter. And I met him at church camp. We become very good friends, and he's like, man, I think you've got the match, you know, because I always act like Elvis, and I dress up like Elvis, and all this other stuff, you know. So he goes, I think you got the knack. I think you got that entertainment vibe inside of you, and I'd love to work with that and help you hone that in if you ever want to do music. So at 18, I decided I wanted to do music. I called him, come to Nashville. He ended up getting this office on downtown Nashville, 18th Avenue, and you know, in my mind, I was gonna make it no matter what I did. You know, I just had that blessing, and so I joined up with a guy named Butter, who happened to be the next door neighbor. I walked outside on the porch one night. He was sitting there playing his guitar, singing a song called Duct Tape and Whiskey. And I knew anybody singing a song called Duct Tape and Whiskey, that had to be my friend. You know, it just made sense.
Yeah.
So we become buddies, and we started Trailer Choir really as a frat party band in order to make extra money while we were writing songs. And the next thing you know, it turned into this thing. Toby Keith saw us and said, hey, I want to put y'all out on the road with me nonstop, you know, for this summer. And next thing you know, that's what we were doing.
Wow. That was back in 2004, right?
We met in 2004, but we, Trailer Choir actually got started in 2006, the
okay.
same year that we got our publishing deal together. But me and Butter met 2 years before that and became best friends.
Right. Now, Trailer Choir was originally a trio. Heather, was it Crystal Hoyt?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny because it actually was originally a duo. Crystal was a hired backup singer, and Toby
okay.
loved her and said, man, she's got that look, and I think she pretty show up a little bit, which was true. And so we asked her to be part of it, and said, you know, Toby thinks that you add this awesome element and vibe to the band, and we were already friends anyways. We respected her as a solo artist even before that, and so you know, we asked her to come on in and join us, and she did, and we took it, you know, we took it to a pretty high level. You know, we never got the Toby Keith status, but we definitely, you know, got to do a lot of great things. I mean, I've opened for ZZ Top and Keith and Sugar Land and Keith Urban and just Merle Haggard. I mean, I've got so many opportunities to do things, and you know, people love it. People love coming to the shows and seeing, you know, the 450-pound break dancer and the girl that was like Pamela Anderson hot, you know, kind of Crystal, kind of like that, you know, Southern Louisiana kind of hot, you know, and then obviously Bill was kind of like that punk rocker kid that, you know, he was everybody, you know, everybody could relate to Butter because he's just this down-home guy that decided, you know what, I'm going to go to Nashville and make it, even though I'm not this great-looking guy. I'm not, you know, 6'4" and, you know, rippling muscle and all that stuff. You know, he said, I'm going to go make it. And then same thing for me being 400 pounds, obviously. Everybody said, there's no way you'll ever make it. There's no way you'll ever get that record deal. Not, you know, I went in and done it. And it's one of the biggest parts of my story that I like to tell is that, you know, I've always loved myself. I always, you know, even when I was 450 pounds, I love myself. I thought I was worth whatever I wanted in life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do a lot of motivational speaking now, and I travel around and do that all the time. And, you know, I tell people, I'm like, you have to love yourself the way you are right now, especially if you want to change. And a lot of people say, well, why do you have to love yourself if you want to change? You should, you know, want to change whatever you are. And I was like,
mm-hmm.
if you don't love yourself enough to do anything, you're going to never change. And so I always tell people all the time, you have to love yourself if you're ever going to be able to truly be your best. You have to love whoever you are, because it's the person that is sitting there now. No matter how big or small, no matter how happy or sad, no matter what social status you are, it's that person that has to decide to make the change, not the end product. The end product comes from the person that decides to do the work. And so I take a big cardboard cut out of me when I'm doing all these speaking engagements, and I was like, that's the guy that saved my life. That's the guy that decided to do all this work and put in all the sweat and tears and everything else. And I truly believe that, so.
What was your big aha moment when you're sitting there at the weight that you were and everything? I mean, I read that it was during a Super Bowl Sunday that you really had some issues. You were hospitalized with cellulitis and diabetes. So was that your wake-up call to think that I have to...
It definitely was.
Things?
I mean, I was laying there in this hospital bed, 27 years old, and they're saying, if you don't change your weight, you got 2 years to live. And, you know, I didn't drink. I didn't do any drugs. I was a very active person. You know, I break YouTube videos you can go watch. And I was very active. I wasn't one of these people that just sit around. And most people always have this, well, if you're fat, you're lazy, is what the stereotype is, you know. And it's kind of crazy. I mean, it's like there's so many things in this world that you can be looked at as bad because you're this way or you're that way. And for me, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, I got kicked off so many airplanes and everything else because of how big I was and everything else. And,
really?
You know, I didn't change for anybody else but myself, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But the aha moment was laying there, you know, them giving me 2 years to live at 27, thinking I'm not going to make it to my 30th birthday because I put myself in this position. There's so many people in this world that, you know, somebody gets cancer or somebody gets a rare disease or gets something that they can't help. There's nothing they could do about it. It was just part of life. And for me, I did that to myself. You know, I gave myself type 2 diabetes. I gave myself liver problems and kidney problems and cellulitis and all that other stuff because of my carelessness, because of me not taking care of myself. And it was hard to deal with that because I'm like, you know, how selfish of me to sit here and be blessed with good health and with, you know, God giving me the strength to be the way I was and taking it for granted as if I was invincible. And other people, you know, like I said, there's people in this world that are born with certain things that they can never get rid of. And I just felt like it was like a slap in the face almost to anybody out there that was not blessed with as good a health as I was.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, you'd have to be somewhat healthy, Vinny. I mean, you can't tour and open for bands. With, you know, I mean, that's a hearty lifestyle and stuff. So,
No doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. Not to pry terribly deep, but what do you think was the reason for your weight gain? Was it a depression thing? Was it a coping mechanism? Was it a, you know, everybody has their own method of weight gain. I have my own and stuff.
Yeah.
Where did yours
come from? A lot of people don't see it the way that I've seen it, but food to me was my drug. You know, I didn't do any kind of drugs. I didn't, drink or anything like that. I never had those vices, but I would eat food. If I was happy, I ate. If I was sad, I ate, you know. And, you know, I firmly believe, you know, before I went on Biggest Loser, I didn't know why I was like that. I didn't know why I felt comfort in food. But after being on Biggest Loser and talking with the psychologist out there, and I always call him the head doctor, even though he tells me not to, but, you know, talking with him and realizing that, you know, the fact that, you know, the abuse that I went through, I always felt like if I got bigger than my stepdad that he could never hurt me anymore. And, you know, you watch cartoons and stuff, and if you get bigger than somebody, then you don't have to worry about them hurting you. And, you know, I just thought in my mind, well, if I can get bigger than him, then he can't hurt me anymore, and I can take up for my mom and all this stuff. And, you know, I didn't realize it affected me that way because, you know, I moved out at such an early age. You know, I never thought that it was still with me, you know, but, it, you know, it turns out that it was, and those were the things that got me that way, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for sure. Buddy, let's go ahead and listen to some more music. Let's lighten the mood a little bit. I've got She's Playing Hard to Forget, Vinny. Tell us a little bit about that one.
You know, had this girl that broke my heart, you know, a long time ago, and it's kind of crazy how you never stop thinking about, you know, some of these people. And, you know, now obviously I have the love of my life and I'm getting married and all that, but, you know, those things still stick with you. You know, you have memories that never leave. And, you know, She's Playing Hard to Forget. I think everybody's had that person in their life that no matter, you know, who, if they fall in love or no matter how hard they try, they just can't forget certain things, you know. And, you know, he or she, you know, whoever is in your life, you know, it's, they play hard to forget, you know. I mean, we've all heard, obviously, the take on they're playing hard to get, but it's even worse when they're playing hard to forget, you know.
Yeah, very good. Very good point. Vinny Hickerson with She's Playing Hard to Forget. When we come back, we're going to hear all about the Biggest Loser. Hold on.
Memory. That's all we had. It all turns out it's just a one-way street.
Hickerson. She's playing Hard to Forget. Catchy little tune, Vinny.
Thank you so much. You know, I actually wrote that with a guy named Keith Falaze, who wrote, like, barbecue stain on my white T-shirt. She was killing me in that miniskirt. And his son, who is the drummer for Hot Shell Ray. And, you know, wow. Just an idea I had. I went in. I was like, guys, I got this idea. We got to write. We sat down. And, of course, as soon as I said it, everybody's like, oh, man, we got to write the fire out of that one. You know, you can't just go in and write a mediocre song on a hook like that. You know, you got to go really go all out and put your heart out there. And, I put my heart out there, told the story about what happened to me, and, you know, we wrote that song.
Yeah, no, it's a brilliant piece of tunage. Buddy, we've got a live chat room going on as the show's going on. I want to thank everybody up in chat, Catherine Taddy from California, Marby in Nashville, producing tonight, and Cindy from Nebraska. Cindy's got a couple questions for you. She wants, first she asked if you were single. We said, no, not single. Lori will get so pissed off, we just can't, we're going to get her wrong.
Yeah, she's my little Puerto Rican flame. And, I definitely can't do anything to upset her, but she's awesome. But, if I was single, you know, I'd be taking numbers, but I'm not, so.
There we go. You're a good man. But Sandy wants to know, actually, which is a good question, because especially with bullying being so in the forefront right now, but she wants to know if you were actually bullied for your weight.
You know what's crazy is this is, like, you know, there's a lot going on with bullying now. I actually speak a lot about it at schools. As a kid, I was made fun of a lot, you know, because I was 230 pounds at 11 years old. And so I was 200 pounds at 10 years old, so I was a very, very large kid. And what happened to me was is I started realizing, I was like, oh, you know what? I'm bigger than these other kids. Mm-hmm. So I became the one that, you know, broke the first punch or push, you know, and kind of bullied my weight around. But it's like I got to be kind of considered the bully, even though I was only 5 because people were hurting me with their words.
Yeah.
So one of the things I say is, you know, like, you always hear the thing, sticks and stones can break your bones, you know, but words have never hurt me. But that's really not true. And, you know, I kind of go off the old saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but please don't throw sticks and stones kind of thing, you know. And I think,
yeah.
One of the things I talk about is, why does the bully bully? Why has this guy got this in his heart, you know? And I wrote a song, actually, that you don't have. I can send it to you, but it's called Running. And it's kind of asking that question, like, what makes you act like this? Is it hard at home? You know, what's going on in your life that makes you decide to come and take it out on somebody else? And, you know, I think it's a terrible thing to bully somebody or hurt somebody in any way, physically or mentally. And I definitely was bullied as a big, small kid. But, you know, as my high school years went on, and I became the big football star and, I did a lot of great things in football. And I was the big guy, you know, and it kind of changes for a guy. What I feel bad for is a lot of times with the girls that are bigger, they don't, you know, they never get the chance to, you know, it's not okay to be the big girl. You know, it's okay to be the big guy, but it's not okay to be the big girl. And I feel sorry for them on that. But, yeah, I mean, bullying is something that we all need to really take into consideration, you know, when we're talking to somebody. Even as adults, we don't realize it when we're doing it sometimes, but you comment on somebody's Facebook post and you make fun of what they're doing or this or that, and you don't think of it as that, but it may hurt their feelings. And you know, you really just look at it as, you know, you got to let people express themselves, but, you know, your expressions and your freedom of speech can't hurt somebody else, you know, and I'm a firm believer in freedom of speech. I'm a firm believer in those things, in all the rights, but you can't take somebody else's rights away just because you have rights as well. You know, I don't think one right should take away another.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree, and I also think, too, I think the bully bullies out of fear, the bully bullies out of hurt. I think it's definitely where, I mean, I was a skinny kid, and I was bullied from grade 1 to grade 12, kind of a thing. But back then,
right,
you just dealt with it, kind of, you know, you didn't, it wasn't really called bullying back then. Now it's full-blown,
mm-hmm,
like, abuse. But back in the day, it was retarded. But
well, you
I
know,
ended up...
I think one of the things, too, is there's no way to get, for a kid, used to, you get bullied at school, you go home, and then it's,
mm-hmm,
done.
Yeah.
And now, you get bullied, and you go home, and you get on your Facebook, and they're still there. You know, and I think that's what you see that kind of... that swing and suicide and some of this other stuff that's happening with these kids is that whenever they go home, they don't get away from the bullying. They don't get away from the bad feelings and the hard things. And for me, going home was the worst thing in the world. You know, for most kids, going home used to be the way they would get away from some of the bad stuff they had to go through. But now,
exactly.
So there's no way to get away from it. And I think that's something that, you know, needs to be taken into account. I think that, you know, kids at school, you know, even on Facebook and stuff, that, you know, I think maybe parents need to monitor kind of what's being said and what's being done, and action should be taken the same way it would as if somebody was doing something at school or hurt somebody in that way as well.
Oh, absolutely. Well, social media sites right now, I think, are the new babysitter. They're the new television. But it's interactive, you know what I mean? So, you know, whatever you put out there, you're going to get back. I mean, the number of videos I've seen of children with parents that have denied them their social, you know, stuff, it's hilarious. But I do find it interesting, though, that with social media, the same type of hurt can be healed on that sort of a level. We just have to really get our priorities straight as a society and become, you know, a sensitive society, be courteous to the feelings of others and not, you know, just fire off, you know.
Yeah, you have to love each other, and it's barbaric not to, obviously. I mean, you know, and you know, I'm not saying you got to be everybody's best friend, you know. I mean, it's in my nature to, I love everybody. I love being around people and all that kind of thing. It's in my nature to want to be people's friends, but, you know, it's, you know, doesn't mean that you have to be everybody's best friend, but you do have to respect them and give them the benefit of being friendly to them. Give them a smile, because you never know, you know, when you give somebody a smile, you never know when that might be the only smile they get for the whole day.
Yeah.
That's something, you know, as a kid, you know, when I went to school, if somebody was nice to me, it was like that was my new friend, because,
yeah,
you know, at home I wasn't getting any smiles. So, you know, being at school, and if I could get somebody to be nice to me, obviously, and I did that as I, you know, progressed in my age and got older and became a very social person, but
yeah,
it does take the world to me when anybody would be nice to me, even as a younger kid.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always important to remember that everybody's got a story, you know, everybody, tread lightly. So let's go to the Biggest Loser. I tell you, buddy, I applaud you for putting up with that. Now, the chat room's been asking, whose team were you on? Were you on Jillian's team?
Well, you know, I was there the first year that Jillian had left, and I ended up being on Dolvet, on Dolvet's team, and then, and we also had Aunt Han. I had to be on her team, but I was there several times, and she was a sweetheart, great person. It was the hardest thing physically I've ever done in my life. I mean, you can't even begin to imagine, you know, how hard it really is. I mean, it's so much harder than what you're to be, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, when the trainers are working out with us, which is three times a week.
You're breaking up there, buddy.
From the time you're up, you like to see you're working.
You there, buddy?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we're just losing you a little bit. Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, the shows that I've watched, the series that I've watched are just brutal. And I'm sitting there with a glass of wine eating popcorn, Vinny. So, I mean, it's not like I'm the picture of health, but, you know.
Hey,
I
can't tell you how many buddies I have that tell me that I watched you when you were losing all that weight, eating a bucket of ice cream and laughing at you. I was like, you know what? I can come back on you one of these days. So, yeah, I used to do some stand-up comedy and stuff, and I still kind of do, but, you know, obviously I had a lot more to kind of crack on back then. But I'd always tell people, I was like, you know what the good thing about being big, you know, being a fat kid was, now looking back, is that I can go back to my 10-year reunion and, you know, everybody be looking at me like, yeah, you're still fat, and I'll be looking at them like, man, you really let yourself go.
Yeah.
Obviously that don't work for me anymore, and I just have my 10-year reunion, but yeah, I mean, it's oh god, it was hard, but it was worth every second of it. I wouldn't change it for anything.
Yeah, now you were in the top four, is that correct?
I made the final four, and my buddy Ramon, who was my best buddy on the show, he ended up winning the marathon. I still lost more weight than him, but he won the marathon, so he got an automatic spot in the finals, so, which was cool with me, definitely. You know, he was my buddy. I didn't go there to win the money. You know, I mean, I wanted to win. I always want to win anything I do, but, you know, I was there really in order to get my health back, and I gave up, you know, we canceled 52 shows with my band in order for me to be there, you know, and we were averaging about 10 to 15 grand each show. So I gave up a lot more money to be there than what I could have won. So.
Yeah. Well, and you ended up winning bigger than ever, because you won back your life. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah. My life, and, you know, just so much more. I mean, I have so much knowledge. And the biggest thing about, you know, getting to do what I got to do is I get to help other people now. You know, I get to help other people realize that they can do it too. You know, I can't motivate anybody. I can inspire, you know, everybody I come in contact with, and inspire them, but your motivation kind of comes from you. And you have to realize, you know, that the only way to get up every morning and go work out, the only way to get up and do it every single day, is to find your reason why. And somebody's reason why is different for every single person. My reason why I became Lori and wanting to be a great husband and a great stepfather, as, you know, I have a great stepfather and everything. But that became my reason why. And all your reason why has to be is stronger than your reasons why not. Because every day, you know, you're going to get hit in the face like, man, I know I need to go work out, but, man, I don't want to get out of this bed. Or you keep hitting the snooze button. You keep doing all this stuff. And your reasons why, you know, will make sure you get up out of that bed and make sure that you do the things you need to do in order to succeed in life, period.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to go back to the chat real quickly, Vinny. Sandy from Nebraska wants to ask, too, was Allison Sweeney nice in person?
She is one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. And me and her got along great. You know, she's just a sweetheart all around. I mean, you know, and not, you know, not to say anything else, but she ain't bad to look at either. She's fun to look at, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, no, she is, honestly. And she had her own little struggle with weight there, too, after the birth of,
yeah,
I think, her second or third child and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Going to go back to Nashville. How do you maintain your weight loss now?
You know, I work out every single day. I don't let a day go by that I don't know, at least. I get up every morning, run 3 miles, and kind of do cardio every day. There's days that I don't go and lift weights, but there's not days that I don't do push-ups, set-ups,
right,
something to work on my body, you know. And, you know, obviously you don't want to work out with heavy weights every day, especially with the kind of weights that I'm lifting now as I'm getting stronger and stronger. But you do want to make sure that you do something for your body every day and you don't just sit around and do nothing. You know, there's times for that. There's definitely times to relax. You need to recover and relax your muscles, watch some TV, you know, and that kind of stuff. But you know, you have to make sure you get something in every single day, some kind of, you know, movement for your body.
Mm, no, absolutely.
And the main thing is diet, really. I mean, you know, I can sit here and preach exercise all day, but, you know, without a good diet, you know, you can't out-train a bad diet. So, for me, you can actually check out bodybyvinny.com. It's, you know, just V-I-N-N-Y, bodybyvinny.com, and it's a protein shake that I use and that I endorse because it's the product that, you know, I lost my last 80 pounds on this product. And something they don't tell you on the show is that while losing 205 pounds now total, I put on 57 pounds of muscle. So it's really like a 260-something pound swing. For me, as the way my body has changed. And that's, you know, like I said, that's something they don't tell you on Biggest Losers, how much muscle I actually put on while losing all that weight.
Absolutely. Well, how tall are you, Vinny?
Right at 6 foot.
Right at 6 foot. So, wow, that's fantastic. So you lost 184 all in total.
I lost 205 total.
205 total. You know, just wanted to make
I lost 184 on the show, though. But,
right.
You know, even lost more since, obviously, since the show. And before, really before the show, I was a big old boy, you know, obviously, and I lost weight before I got there because I had type 2 diabetes and everything else wrong with me, and I didn't wait for the show to come around to start losing weight. I was 450 before I got to the show and 426 when I got there.
Jeez. What was the whole process of actually, you simply just wrote in, you emailed in, how does that whole process work? I had tons of people go on American Idol and everything, but how does the Biggest Loser work with that kind of
process?
Well,
it's kind of the same thing, you know, you go wait in line to get that audition. For me, I got a VIP pass because I used to date a girl named Dana DeSilvio who was on the first ever season of Biggest Loser, and she called me up while I was in my hospital bed and said she wanted me to go audition, and she's been trying to get me to audition for years. I'm telling you, since the first season, she's been wanting me to audition, and I never would do it. You know, I always said, no, that show is just to make fun of fat people, and that's really what the way I thought. You know, I honestly thought that's what the show was for, and I didn't realize how great that show really was, and, you know, I you know, when I got there, I was like, I think everything I ever said bad about this show, because it's not that, you know, and, but, you know, you stand in line, you wait all day, you put in your application, and you sit down at a table with 9 other people, and you start telling your story. Everybody starts talking all at the same time, and then they pick one by one. They'll kind of tell you, okay, now it's your turn to talk. Now it's your turn to talk. You know, we want to hear your story. We want to hear what little bit you know, what do you got to say, and that kind of stuff. And, you know, that's how it's done, really. I mean, just like any other casting call.
Yeah. Back up in chat, we got a lot of people talking about fried chicken and everything. So, we've done a number of shows on health, fitness, and eating right and everything like that. And I would say 95% of the people we've chatted with who are health experts always suggest, too, that you pick a day and have a cheat day. You have what you really want. You have the slice of pizza, you have the fried chicken and stuff. Do you agree with that kind of way of thinking? Is that something that you do?
Let me put it this way. I was addicted to food. And a lot of people out there that get as big as I was are addicted to food. Now, if somebody's got a little bit of overweight problem, yeah, they can probably have a cheat day. But somebody that's addicted to food, I look at it like this. You wouldn't say, okay, I'm going to try and get this guy off cocaine. But every Sunday, I'm going to let
you can have a line.
Have all the cocaine that he wants.
Yeah.
It just don't work that way with an addiction. When you're addicted to something, you have to break all the bad habits. You have to break all that away from you and realize that you're not dependent on it, that you don't need that. And that's what I had to do for me. Now, that being said, I hear all kinds of, you know, trainers and other people say, yeah, you got to give yourself a cheat day and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm not going to say they're wrong. They've obviously been doing this way longer than me. But for me personally, that's not something I had the luxury of having. And I never took it. There were other people at the ranch that would take those days, and they lost just as much or more weight than I did. Really, I mean, you know, I definitely am not going to say it doesn't work. You know, if you do that, because it does. But you know, I don't suggest it for somebody that's addicted to food.
Yeah, no, especially, and you know, it must have kind of screwed you up too, because especially on The Biggest Loser, they're forced into you to eat 5 to 6 to 7 meals a day. I mean, they're fully balanced and everything like that. So, almost with a food addiction, did it benefit you eating that many times a day? Did you feel satisfied emotionally that way?
Well, you know, you're working on your mind, and
right.
For me personally, the meal plan that they had was actually 5 meals a day. You have a meal, and then, you know, 2 to 3 hours later you have a snack, and you have a meal, then 2 or 3 hours later you have a snack, and you have a meal. And, you know, your final meal and of the day and stuff. Now, really for us, you know, I was at 2,000 calories a day is what the doctor put me on. And I was burning, of course, about 10,000 calories a day. So it was 45% carbs, 25% good fat, and 30% protein. That's what they had
right.
me on.
Wow.
Now, obviously, the protein was all lean, like, you know, fish and chicken.
Right.
You know, I ate red meat once a week, and really the only reason I ate red meat once a week was to spike my leptin levels, which is what other people were considering their cheat day. They were eating, if they ate a pizza or ate some pizza on a cheat day or on their, you know, spike days, because you want to spike your leptin level in order to keep your body burning the fat, you know.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
If your body gets used to something, it'll store up. That's why people go through plateaus, is because, you know, they get used to, their body gets used to whatever they're doing, and they need to, you know, switch it up a little bit.
Right. Lori from Los Angeles in the chat wants to know, Vinny, what is your favorite healthy dish now?
You know, I've fallen in love, I know it's going to probably sound weird, but I used to love collard greens, obviously, and I'd cook greens with bacon fat and grease and everything else, but I love spinach and fish. I mix spinach and fish or spinach and eggs. I'd say my favorite is probably chicken and vegetables. That's what I eat pretty much every day. You know, I have at some point in time that chicken and vegetables. It's hard to say what my favorite one is. You know, there's so many options when you really get out there and learn how to cook. You know, when you really get out there and take time to learn it, you can make healthy food that's just as delicious and just as, you know, appetizing and everything as all the bad stuff that you
Absolutely. Vinny, this is you should do a cooking show now.
You know, I've been talking about that. I did this thing called Southern Fried Fitness, and this woman's take on it is 80% healthy and 20% indulgent, and it kind of fits with the whole cheat day thing, only it's more, you know, at a time. You know, you get that at each meal, you get 20% indulgence and 80% healthy and everything. So I did that show with her, and it went over great. You know, we had a great time doing that. I enjoy it. I love being, you know, in the spotlight, you know, being on, you know, TV and stuff like that was fun. So it ain't something I wouldn't do. But now, you know, I haven't mastered my own dishes. You know, a lot of times I look at what other people make and I just kind of copy what they did, you know. But, you know, I mean, but maybe I could just be the host of it or something.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Let's go back to some music now. I've got Without all queued up and ready. So tell me a little bit about Without.
You know, this is a song that... The whole idea of it come to me when I was at Biggest Loser, when I was at the ranch, and I was without Lori every single day. And, you know, you think about there's times, you know, when you're that you leak into arguments, have little spats, and things like that. And, you know, it's like those are times that you don't want to be around somebody sometimes. It's like, man, I don't want to deal with, you know, whatever you're going through and all that kind of stuff. But when I was there, I was like, man, even the worst day with her would be, you know, is better than the best day without her. And as I sit there and thought about that, you know, I mean, originally I started writing the song kind of just saying, you know, thank God I got you, and then I, you know, I decided to, you know, make you mine and that kind of stuff. But as I started writing the song, it kind of hit me to write it as, you know, this guy that had lost his girl, and he's kind of giving information to somebody that if I could go back and change it, I would, because even the worst days with her beat the best days without. you know, that's what it's about. You know, I think everybody has those moments, you know, and the first time I ever heard somebody say something similar to that, they were actually talking about how whenever their grandmother had Alzheimer's, and they were talking about, you know, having to take care of her and how hard it was and all this stuff, but they said, you know, but, you know, no matter how bad it got, I'd give anything to still have her here and have one more day with her and all that. You know, I thought about writing it from that angle, too. So there were so many ways that song could have went.
Well, let's give it a listen. This is Vinnie Hickerson with Without. When we come back, more with Vinnie. Hold on.
Holla.
Different as day and night. Opposites black and white. About almost anything, the weather, the rain, religion and blame, it was pure insanity. So I took off, I didn't take it like a man. If I had one wish, if I could do it all,
everybody can relate to that as well. You know, I mean, who hasn't had somebody in their life that they've either lost or that they can't get, you know, get to anymore? They'd give anything to have that one more day with them. And, you know, even thinking back to the worst day that you ever had with them would still be better than having lived without them.
Yeah, don't make me cry, Vinny. I'll punch you in the head.
I don't like getting punched in the head.
Yeah, you sound like
if I'd have sent my dad's song, it would have probably made you cry. It's called Howard Things Up There, so I didn't send it for that reason.
Well, send it to me. I'd love to go ahead and play it anyways. But you sound like a great guy, a hopeless romantic and stuff. Let's mention Lori. Lori's been with you for how many years now?
You know, I guess it's, you know, we kind of met in 2009, and I think we got together in, well, I know we got together, don't mean, I won't say think, August 22nd, 2010 is whenever I asked to officially be my girlfriend. And, you know, we knew each other for almost a year, a little over a year, well over a year, I guess. And I just never would kind of make that plunge, I guess. I just kept saying, no, you know, I'm on the road all the time, and I'm not going to be your boyfriend. And I told her, I was like, I'm never going to be your boyfriend. And she said, yeah, you are. And then she was right. And I've come to find out that she's always right. Even if she's wrong, she's right.
You're a smart man. How did you and Lori meet?
We actually met. I was at a place called Maya, which is a dance club in Nashville. She was out for her birthday. Of course, I'd always go out dancing and stuff because I loved it. You know, like I said, I wasn't a lazy person, even though I was gigantic. And I was out dancing, and I saw her from across the room, and I told my buddy Keith Johnson. I said, Keith, I said, I'm about to go over here and ask my future wife. And of course, at the time, it was just kind of funny to my buddy, but I didn't realize it was coming through.
Mm-hmm. Now, you proposed to her in a great place.
Yeah, that was awesome. And you know, I took the stage at the Grand Ole Opry, and I just had Carter's Court. I almost said Carter's Court. It's another band I love. Thompson Square sang their song, Are You Gonna Kiss Me or Not? And they're one of my, you know, good friends. We've known each other for a long time. And so I called them up because they got that song, Are You Gonna Kiss Me or Not? And I'm like, could y'all come do this at my you know, engagement and everything? And they're like, oh, yeah, that'll be awesome. I was like, you know, we're going to have the whole Grand Ole Opry completely cleaned out and just be up there. And y'all sing the song, and I'm going to take her up on the stage. And I took her up on the stage, and there's a big old circle from the Ryman Auditorium that's inside the new Opry building. And I took her up there on that, and I said, you know what? I said, there's been so many dreams that have come through right there on the spot. So many legends have been born. So many great things have happened. I said, a person like you, and a dream like this, had to come true in the spot. Dreams are supposed to come true. And I asked her out there to be my wife, and she said yes. And I figured if I asked her there with a nice enough ring, all that good stuff, she couldn't say no. So that was kind of
exactly.
My plan.
Exactly. Good thinking, buddy. Your wedding's coming up this fall, is that correct?
Say it one more time.
Your wedding's coming up this fall?
10, 11, 12, yeah. We're going to be doing the ceremony and all that good stuff at a barn called Smiley Hollow. It's a big farm kind of place. And you know, it's just a couple months away, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you doing a big wedding, small wedding? What are you guys doing?
I mean, to me, it's gigantic. To her, it's kind of small. But to me, you know, I'm used to, like, people in my family, we get married at the local church, and you just kind of, you know, everybody just comes together, and you have a potluck, and everybody brings their favorite covered dish, and you have a wedding. But, you know, girls sometimes have a little different thing in mind for what they want for their wedding, and Lori definitely had her wedding planned for a long time, and, you know, she had all the plans. She was just waiting to find the right person to do it with, and luckily I got to fit in that spot.
Well, and she's got great taste, and as do you, my friend. Vinny, I just want to go ahead and make mention. I totally forgot to mention at the top of the hour, and I want to thank you, Vinny, personally. This is At Home with Victoria's 200th show, now available on Blog Talk Radio and on iTunes. So we're 2 centuries old, technically, but I want to go ahead and make mention of it. And thank you for being a part of it, buddy. It's fantastic.
That's a blessing and an honor for me to get to be a part of it. I appreciate y'all having me on.
It's a good luck omen, buddy. What's
anytime I get a chance to get on and spread the word, you know, and let people know that you can change and you can do anything you want. You know, you just have to be willing to do it. I want to definitely, you know, get on and do it. So.
No, absolutely. I want to give a personal shout out to Paula Smith for putting us together too. How do you know Paula?
You know, she started working with one of my buddies, and you know, met her one night in town. You know, at a songwriter thing, and you know, we become acquaintances then. Well, then the other night I was doing this thing called Honky Tonk Teasing, and, you know, I saw her there, and she heard me sing for the first time, and she was like, wow. She's like, I didn't know you could sing and play guitar and all that kind of stuff. She goes, I knew you could dance and all that. And she's like, you know, let's work together. So we started kind of working together and talking about, you know, some business things and all this, and we become friends. And she just called me up, and she said, hey, would you want to do this, you know, this radio show? I was like, well, I'd love to, you know. And she's just a sweetheart of a person. Like, you get around her, and it's like, it's kind of infectious, her smile and just the way she is, you know. She's just a good person.
Yeah, no, she's a peach, and I adore her. I adore her with all my love. But we got 9 minutes left, buddy. Tell me what you got in the hopper, too. Paula has kind of hinted in my ear a couple things that I'm not going to mention, but you got a lot of good things coming up.
You know, I just, before Biggest Loser, I just went out to L.A. to start working on my acting career, and I started working with a woman named Cindy Fairley, who is, if you've ever watched any of the Fairley Brothers movies, Dumb and Dumber, Something About Mary, Me, Myself, Myself and Irene. I mean, just tons of great movies. I mean, they're responsible for those movies. And, you know, I got an opportunity to begin working with her, and she took me under her wing and kind of just said, hey, you know, I think you can be a star, but you got to lose weight. And that was one of the other things that led me to wanting to lose weight, actually, was the fact that she told me I was, you know, I was bigger, so much bigger than all the other actors that I was, you know, wouldn't really fit on the screen the right way with them, and I needed to lose weight in order to do that. Because she said her brothers would use me in movies, but they would just use me as a comedy prop, and she said she wanted me to be more than that. So I had an audition for Dumb and Dumber 2, and then Jim Carrey bailed on that, so I don't actually have an audition anymore for that movie, but I'm sure I'll have one for whatever the next movie the Fairley Brothers decide to do. I've been working on my music, working to get that new record deal, a solo deal, you know, and I got to go out there and show people that I can trust myself kind of thing. And, I'm working on a 501c3 that is going to be a kids camp to help, you know, kids realize that they can have fun while getting exercise. They can, you know, that everything doesn't have to revolve around video games and things like that. They can actually get outside and have a good time. So that's a big passion of mine, is to help with childhood obesity. And then what I want to do is have it where it's for the kids during the summertime, but in the winter and fall and spring months, it would actually be a resort for people to come and get their weight, their journey started, I guess, more than anything, and get those first 20 or so pounds off, and that way they can, you know, get everything, yeah, I guess, going in fast forward.
Yeah. No, you're not going to gain any weight sitting like that. That's for damn sure.
No doubt.
No doubt. But people can find you on Facebook. They can find you on Reverb Nation. You can go ahead and go on to www.trailerchoir.com to listen to the Trailer Choir series. And any other social sites that I'm missing?
Twitter, BiggVinnyMack. You can find me on Twitter like that. On Facebook, in order to find me personally, my personal page is completely full, but I have a fan page, which I consider a friend page. I think everybody's a friend instead of a fan, but it's Vinny Hickerson, Biggest Loser, Season 12 fan page. So just type in Vinny Hickerson and you'll find it. It'll come up, and you know, it's a cool little page, and it's, you know, I do updates on there, and I show me doing workouts and things like that. You can also go to BigVinny.com, BiggVinny.com, and that's kind of a personal website where you can kind of keep up with all the speaking engagements and shows and different things that I'm doing around the world.
Well, Vinny, I can't thank you enough for taking the whole hour to be with us, and please, my hugest respect for you in all ways, shapes, and forms. We've got a big fan of your music. Please consider At Home with Victoria your home as well. Please come back.
Oh,
you guys,
I would love to be on.
Come down the pipeline.
If you don't have me on, I'd love to be on. And I'd like to kind of know, just, you know, from the panel of folks listening, you know, around there that are on the live chat, just kind of what they thought of the music and what they think of the songs and things like that. So I'm actually putting out a question for them.
Okay,
good. Get your fingers to work, people. I want to know what you thought about the songs and which one was your favorite. And, you know, these are all things I'm taking to the record labels for them to hear and kind of see if they want to sign me or not, you know?
Yeah. All right. Well, then, you know what? Let's go ahead, and I'm going to add a little bit of more time. We're going to come back and answer those questions, but let's go ahead and play a little bit more music with You Make Me Feel. Give us a little bit of background info on that.
You Make Me Feel Like a Man. This song is kind of it was a fun song to write. I actually wrote it with Keith Follavay and my friend Brandon Ray. And it's kind of about just being around that girl or that guy, that person, you know, I guess really more that girl, but being around that girl that just makes you feel like a stud, you know. Anybody, like one of the lyrics says, you make me feel like Eddie Van Halen, rocking out 20,000 amps or whatever it is. And just thinking about that, you know, like somebody that makes you feel like Michael Jordan taking the game-winning shot. You know, when a girl can make you feel like that, you know, it's real love. You know, that's a girl that's going to be hard to pretend to be ever loser, so.
Yeah, absolutely. As from the chat, Sandy from Nebraska loves, 1 second, we scroll down, Without, and she's playing Hard to Forget. I'm sad that you're single. I'm sad that you're engaged, blah, 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 you know. Sandy's drunk, clearly. And Marilyn Bennett just basically said, you know, all of them are a piece of work, buddy. So I can't again thank you enough. This has been Vicki Hickerson. Again, huge thanks, buddy, and most love to you and Lori for a happy, happy wedding, and we'll have you back on real soon.
Well, thank y'all so much, and I appreciate y'all letting me be part of y'all's family.
Thank you, buddy. You take care. Love to Lori.
Have a good one.
You've been listening to Vinnie Hickerson, NBC's Biggest Loser 2011, and a fantastic inspiration and motivational speaker, as well as a Nashville recording artist. I want to thank everybody up in chat, Sandy and Marby from Nashville, guest 4962, and Catherine Taddy was here, but just couldn't get any sound. I'm so sorry, Taddy, but this is Michael Kay for At Home with Victoria signing off on technically our 200th show, playing out with a little bit more of Vinnie Hickerson with You Make Me Feel Like a Man. Good night, everybody. God bless.
I feel like Eddie Van Halen, hands up 20,000 watts. Just like Jordan in the big game, everybody screaming out my name. I feel like a 66 bet, top down candy apple red, 400 horses underneath my feet. Girl, that's what you do to me.
An interactive news and entertainment show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Download us on iTunes as a free podcast and like us on Facebook. I'm Shelley Rand, musician and announcer for At Home with Victoria. Download my CD on iTunes and Amazon and friend me on Facebook.